You're listening to a podcast from Blogging Heads TV.
Good morning, Megan.
Morning, Mark. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
So, what are we talking about today?
Well, so you had an interesting column likening being a conservative to being a racial or sexual minority.
Let me make it clear that I was not saying these things are morally equivalent, merely right. saying that the sociological equivalent. Group dynamics of out-groups and in-groups are work by the same things because, you know, human's going to human. It's we don't come up with super novel ways of handling in-group and out-group.
So what should we learn from this, Rabbi?
Well, I mean, you know, there's a couple of things to learn. And I think the first is that there are kind of tipping points where you can have a small but not overwhelming majority of one group that's a strong identification, right? You know, like, look, I'm a tall person. I am a four sigma outlier on the height distribution. But it's not really like a constituent part of my identity. It's something I know about myself, but I don't like hang out with other tall people. Although, funnily enough, when I was dating, people used to be like, oh, I've got a great golf guy for you. He's tall. Nothing else about him. It's like, oh, good. We can talk about tall things. We can do our tall activities.
I did notice your description of your dating life. You listed libertarian as a deal breaker. Right, that was an essential.
No, I didn't actually. I dated liberals. I dated conservatives. I dated libertarians. I ended up. It is true that maybe in the way that sometimes religious people will date outside of the faith and then come home to marry, dinner at lunch out, dinner home, as Catholics right. say. But I did end up marrying a libertarian. But
I've been using that as my excuse all these years.
there were things that were important to me. They just weren't politics. And probably it makes it easier to be married to someone who agrees with you politically, given that I spend a lot of time talking about politics. And it would be unharmonious to be talking to someone who disagreed with me about everything all the time. But you know, when it's an important part of your identity, and it's amazing how strong politics is now. It's probably always been that way. We don't have good measures. But apparently, when you look at things like implicit association tests, political biases against your political enemies are actually stronger than racial biases. So these are very highly emotional topics. They are incredibly defining to who we are in America today. And when you...
Well, and also people are less ashamed of expressing them.
I don't know. I feel like it's been this
way. It seems obviously wrong now to respect somebody less on the grounds of race or even for most of us, gender identity. Right. But not obviously wrong to disrespect somebody for having awful opinions.
We'll get to
right?
that.
I mean, we all do that.
Sure.
I mean, it's always a question of just how far you're prepared to go in your tolerance.
That is true. However, I think that in general, I always try to assume that someone is mistaken rather than bad, which is a distinction that is made less and less often in today's politics. But the point is that when you have this, when it is a strong, regular part of your identity, in much the same way that maybe being Protestant was sort of constitutive of elite identity 50 years ago and no longer is, that when you have even a slight majority, because people like people who are like them, right? If something's important to you and someone is like you, you think, oh, well, they must be a splendid all around human being. Because of that, with no, it doesn't have to be
right,
deliberate.
And there's good data on that.
Right. It does not have to be a matter of people all sitting around and saying, okay, well, we're not going to allow any conservatives to be hired. Although I will say that in academia, at least, they've done surveys in some of the more left-leaning disciplines and found that something like 20 to 30% will say just outright, yeah, no, I would discriminate against Republicans, evangelicals, fundamentalists. Even, and these are not, by the way, disciplines in which, this is not biology. this is, I would discriminate against them in social psychology and things like that. And as the guy who did the survey said, usually you have to be really tricky to get people to admit they discriminate. And he's surveying basically the people who do those kinds of surveys. And they're all like, yep, no, that's a down check. But that even without that, even with no deliberate attempt to exclude people, you can end up with a group that looks a lot like you.
Let me start. That's frequently said. I'm sure it's true. How many people who teach human resources in business schools are pro-labor? Damn few, I bet.
So actually, I will say the only HR course I took in business school was taught by a labor lawyer. And it was all about labor law. And it was all about all of the things you can't do. It was a little weird, right? Because the professor, who was wonderful and extremely old, I think I spent like most of the class just thinking he was going to die at the lectern. He was holding on to it. He was quite shaky, but very, very sharp and a terrific professor. And I really enjoyed the class, but it was a little outdated given that, you know, I'm sure when he started teaching that in the 60s, that was a huge thing that you needed to know.
Union busting was not really part of the curriculum back then.
Right. Well, but also it was that almost none of the people who were taking the class were going to have to deal with a union. I mean, you know, private unionization by 2000 or 2001, when I was taking this class, was not really a hot management tool in the way that it had been in the 60s. But it was actually all about, like, you know, how discrimination law works, how union labor law works, what you can require workers and what you can't. And I don't know. I mean, I was at Chicago. It's known as a freshwater sort of free market kind of school. So I don't know what his politics were, but he was not union unfriendly. He was just telling us, like, this is what the law is. And I think there's actually a fair amount of that. There's certainly going to be in business schools a huge amount of, you know, these are how you do your diversity initiatives. These are how you do. So I wouldn't necessarily assume that it's all. But look, there are things I had a back and forth on Twitter.
I had one real life experience with this, which actually rocked me. When I was at UCLA, you know, which is at least it was at one time the second best Chicago school economics department. You know, three or four really top right people in that department. It's still a very proud department. And Herb Gintis came through to give a talk about sort of unified social science, which is the thing he's doing now. But, I mean, so Herb was a Marxist economist, tried to do that at Harvard. No, they weren't having any of that, so he didn't get tenure. Went to UMass, built a whole department around that with Sam Bowles, wrote some really brilliant papers. I mean, that's not my tradition, but he did some very interesting work, which sort of surprised me that you could do interesting work in that tradition. Then Mosley gave it up and went off with I'm blanking on the name. Great psychologist at UCLA, did all the social capital, public goods investment work, you know, the public goods game. People have to contribute or not contribute to a public good, and then the proceeds are shared. Got all sorts of tremendous results. I mean, there must be 1,000 citations of that set of papers. So, you know, well-known guy. He was at the Santa Fe Institute, had just gone emeritus from UMass, and casually mentioned that he'd actually be interested in a new teaching assignment. And UCLA Economics had been having trouble hiring, because the university didn't really want to pay what economists get paid these days. So I went to one of my friends, one of the very important people in that department, and said, hey, you guys have got an opportunity. And he didn't really know Gintis' work, and I sort of explained. And he said, oh, he was a Marxist? Oh, no, I couldn't even raise it in the department. Not a starter. Right? So it's not as if every department doesn't have some things you can't do.
So economics is an outlier in this, where economics seems to have, you know, the Marxists are, I would say, like, the Marxists are excluded. The Austrians are also excluded. So it's not really a right-wing thing. The Austrians are all hanging out at George Mason, being, you know, the Marxists are all at Amherst. And I guess they were at Notre Dame for a while, and now they're not. But anyway, you know, that's right. And I got into a back and forth on Twitter about this with a guy who, it somehow it always comes down to Hitler and creationism. Would you tenure Hitler? No. It was like not an interesting argument. And then creationists. And like, what's really interesting is like the extent to which people are completely convinced, first of all, that most conservatives are creationists, which is false. Second of all, that most creationists are conservative, which is probably true, but not necessarily, because in fact, African-American Christians have a higher rate of believing in creationism than white American Christians do. And if someone... Well,
to make the point you made before, there are beliefs that people have, and there are beliefs that are people that are constitutive.
Sure.
There are chunks of America where nobody can get elected public office without pretending to be a creationist.
Sure.
And those are not black.
We're not debating creationism. My point is that no one advances that as a reason that African Americans, who have a higher rate of religiosity, especially African American women, no one says, well, we obviously there are no African Americans at the university. They're all creationists, right? Like, this is a ridiculous argument, and we recognize that. But somehow when conservatives come up, it's like, obviously, we can't have conservatives. They're creationists. And also, you know, my personal opinion is that, look, if you're in the philosophy department, I don't really see why it matters whether you're a creationist or not. If you are in many, many departments, you shouldn't be teaching biology, because that's not the method. Theologians and biologists just don't have anything to say to each other, right? They don't work the same way. And yes, you can't come to an economics department and be like, my method is interpretive dance, right? There, you have to, and it was actually the example I gave of a magazine, is you can't go to the Atlantic and say, I do my writing in architecture, right? No, you have to write down words in a row, and then they go in the magazine. And if you don't do that, we're not doing the same project, and you can't work here.
Let me slow you down for one second. So, you know, creationists come in lots of different flavors, and not well distinguished. But, I mean, like, take Sarah Palin as an example, and not a random example. I mean, she could have been president of the United States if things had worked out differently. She's a young Earth creationist.
Right.
Right.
I'm speaking of young Earth creationists. The intelligent design people, it's non-falsifiable, but it's not really incompatible with anything, right?
Right. But young Earth is incompatible not only with all the biology, but with all the physics.
Yeah, but maybe God created the world old.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I mean, really, right? Like, there's no... the two methods do not work together. You cannot prove anything, you know. It's incompatible, but God is mysterious. He could have created the universe this way for reasons we do not understand. And that's why
you still can't do astrophysics that way.
Sure.
Right. Cause then it's not valid to say that there are 4 billion year old galaxies.
Yeah. Paleontology also, but you know what? We're evolutionary genetics, whatever. We're talking about a really tiny handful of fields at very large universities. Most of the people studying at universities and most of the people working at universities are not in these handful of fields. And yet universities as a whole are overwhelmingly liberal. The economics department is balanced, and STEM is more balanced, but still skewed. But the humanities outside of economics are overwhelmingly skewed towards one side. And it's also true of the media, is that there are places, the Wall Street Journal has a conservative op-ed page, although a liberal news side. And then, of course, there are political magazines. But overwhelmingly, my field is Democrats. I mean, it's really hard to find Republicans. It's really hard to find conservatives. There are some.
So you say the Wall Street Journal has a liberal news side.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that the Krugman principle? That facts are well known to have a liberal bias?
No. I don't think so.
Well, so what is it that causes the Wall Street Journal
cultural
to have a liberal news page?
What makes
the news page liberal?
Understand that in a newspaper, there's what's known as the wall between the editorial side.
Oh, yeah.
And the news side. So, for example...
In ancient history, before things became so tribal, I used to write for the Wall Street Journal op-ed page.
Right. They still have Tom Frank, as far as I know. So it's they still have the House liberal who's allowed to they take
who's that?
Tom Frank.
Oh yeah,
Frank. I could be wrong, but the last time I looked, he was still writing for them. But there's a total wall. The hiring is separate. I mean, there's transmission back and forth in that often people from the news side will eventually end up as columnists. But it's certainly at the Post and the Times, the places that I'm most familiar with, it's complete and the Journal, it's completely separate. They're basically two different organizations under the same masthead. And so because of that, cultural transmission, you hire news reporters, you get them from one place, you hire opinion writers, you get them from another place. And the media overall is overwhelmingly liberal, which means that the people you're hiring pool for the news side is going to be overwhelmingly liberal. The opinion side has fought that by deliberately selecting on ideology. If you don't select on ideology, then, and you just hire from the normal pool, you're going to end up hiring liberals. And of course, because you too have the same affinity biases as everyone else, you're going to find liberals a little more congenial. You're gonna talk about stuff and they're gonna seem like they make a whole lot of sense, right? And it's not that you will never hire a conservative, but the conservative has to be extraordinary. The liberal just has to be ordinary. And that's, you know, I would offer examples of places where that works in reverse, but the only profession I'm aware of that is as skewed as academia and media is Baptist ministers. And I don't actually think that's how hiring works for Baptist ministers. Well,
but again, it seems to me we've done the experiment to some extent. So now Fox News has been in operation for 20 years as a major operation, right? Entirely conservative, right? You're not allowed to, right? And yet somehow they've never produced anybody of any quality that the liberal media wanted to poach. I mean, you know, a couple of people have been poached.
There's a fair amount.
They're not overwhelmingly. I mean, if your theory were right, the token conservative that gets hired from Fox News would just be obviously better than the run of reporters, and that doesn't seem to be the case. And we also have a whole mass that never gets talked about of right wing universities.
It's quite small in number, but yes.
Somehow.
But actually, even the faculty at those places, it depends on the school. But if you actually talk to people who've gone to those schools, it turns out that the faculty is often to the left of the student body and certainly of their denomination. So exception Patrick Henry University, but in fact it's not. There is a and this is going to be, you know, the theology professors are generally pretty orthodox, but
Liberty University,
I think, expecting, but this is actually, I think, an error about Fox News. Mm-hmm. Right, is that people say, well, why isn't it symmetrical, why doesn't it look just like, and I think that it's not a market equilibrium where, you know, the media skews liberal and therefore you build another institution that just skews a little bit right the way the media skews a little bit left, right? What Fox News did, genius, they discovered a market opportunity, right? Is there are a lot of people who know that the media is center left. And I think denying that is just silly. I'm wasting time arguing about whether the media skews liberal and whether those inflect what we write is just, you know, if you can't see it, it is because you are the fish in water. Anyone who is to the right of the media can see the skew and experiences it. Hostile and show
can anybody who's to the left of the media.
Indeed. But there are a lot fewer of those than there were people who were to the right of the media. On the American political spectrum, the media is to the left. It just is. So what Fox News said was there's people here who are annoyed at having this media, which is constantly kind of talking down to them and getting stories wrong. And again, you don't even have to think it's deliberate, right? It's just that, like, if you are not a conservative, conservatives look weird to you and you don't cover them well. But also in your story choices, I think the example that I always like to give, those hour long news programs, 60 Minutes and so forth. Every time there was a gun story, right? It would be committed with a semi-automatic, weapon, which is one trigger, or I guess sometimes a revolver, usually a semi-automatic weapon. One trigger pull, one bullet, right? That's what semi-automatic is for watchers who don't know. So, semi-automatic doesn't sound that different from automatic, right? It just sounds like maybe they're in the same group. And in fact, they're quite different. Automatic is you pull the trigger and bullets keep firing until the magazine empties. And so what they would do to illustrate these stories was they would find an automatic weapon. Now, automatic weapons have been illegal in the United States mostly since the 30s, entirely since 1986, except for some grandfathered weapons that have to be registered. They have this incredibly onerous background and transfer process, and they cost about $50,000 a piece. And so as far as I know, they have never been used in a crime because they're insanely expensive.
What do you mean gun control works?
I'm not getting into gun control here. I'm talking. Anyway, the point is that these weapons have nothing to do with anything that they're illustrating, right? They would not be. Right. You're writing about the assault weapons ban. They're not banning these weapons because they were already banned 30 years ago. And so they would rent a machine gun and they would put a watermelon like on a fence, and then they would blow the hell out of this watermelon, right? To a lot of liberal people, like, that seems like reasonable, right? It's visually dramatic and so forth. But conservatives are really angry, and kind of rightfully so. You are skewing the story in a way that makes this ban sound more important and powerful than it is. And I don't necessarily think that the producers who decided to do that thought they were being dishonest. They were just like, we need something visually interesting to do, right? Shooting a watermelon once is really actually not that visually interesting. It just gets a hole.
I was making a different point, right? Which is the Gary Becker point, right? So if there's only taste discrimination, right? If some people, right? Then it's going to be the case that any interloper in the industry who doesn't have that taste will benefit from being able to hire from a discriminated against pool and therefore get higher quality material.
Right. So I think.
Right. So you've just predicted that Liberty University is producing great physics, because all the conservative physics professors who couldn't get a job at Harvard because they're conservative had to go to Liberty University and invent new elementary particles.
So that ain't happening. I think there is a deeper sociological point here, right? Which I agree is a critique of Becker. Partly this is short-term or long-term equilibrium, right? Like in the short term, I think, look, if whites aren't hiring black physics professors, right, then you can decide to go to school and study physics. And if you are super devoted, maybe you will, but you in the 1940s might have thought, know what, I'm going to be a Pullman porter because that's a job I know I can get and I can do it, right? It's steady and so forth. When identity becomes wrapped up in a profession, then people who don't have that identity often look and say, that's not for me. And, I think in the case of conservatives, I would never say that this was true of African-Americans in the 40s. But I think for conservatives, it's a two-way street, right? Is that they, and there is absolutely a strain of anti-intellectualism in part of the GOP that I really think is a huge mistake. But it is partly an iterative process of being looked down on and unfairly maligned by liberals. Some of the maligning is fair, but a lot of it isn't. A lot of it is young earth creationists.
Right.
Right. And so you start thinking, well, those people hate me. I hate them. And then people who might have been great physics professors go do something else. Right. And so there, I think that it is more complicated than what Becker thought, or maybe for Becker, right? It's going to work with low level unskilled workers where you can just, the minute you start hiring, you can just get those workers. But when it's a lifelong process of assuming an identity as taking a profession is, it's going to be complicated. You know, it's true. Everyone I know who edits conservative publications and we got to find good people. It's hard to get good people in, but that's partly because those people think, I don't know. And maybe part of it is like genetic. You're more genetically likely to be conservative and less genetically likely to be a good writer. I don't know. But you know what? In general, when I see people reporting on surveys, I won't hire these people. Genetics is not the first place I'm going.
Right. No.
Right. So, culture is not. So I think that is a problem because, first of all, this is half the country, but also because we're now seeing ways. There's a really good paper by Li Jusim et al. I'm not going to recite all the names, in which they point out that in social psychology, for example, there's decades now, been this whole cottage industry in proving that conservatives are more closed-minded and authoritarian and so forth. And it turns out when you look at the questions, it's like all of questions are about, should you defer to this group that is conservative identified? And if you instead ask, should we defer to environmentalists or some other group that's liberal identified, it turns out liberals are raging authoritarians and conservatives are rebels. And so, you know, the problem is that, in fact, it leads you to do bad science. It leads you to do bad journalism because you miss stories. How many people missed the Trump story? Right. And we missed that story because we couldn't imagine it. That's a problem for journalism. It is a problem for academia to be missing all of these stories, all of the questions that aren't asked, all of the bad, smug, self-satisfied consensus research that gets done. I deeply think we need to do better, not just because it's good for conservatives. I mean, like, look, I think it's a problem for conservatives, but ultimately, and this goes back to why I'm not drawing a moral equivalence between this and, say, African Americans, is that ultimately, like, most of the people who don't become writers or academics are still going to have fine lives, and they're not going to, you know, they're going to have economic opportunity and so forth. So while I think it is sad, the people who can't do what they dream of doing, it is not as sad as someone who grows up incredibly underdeprived and finds themselves kind of incarcerated or systematically oppressed and excluded from the system at every step. But it is a problem for society. That we are not, that we've become so narrow.
But that's the next step I wanted to take. So if Becker is wrong about the academic
labor market. Let us say incomplete.
Let's say incomplete about the academic labor market. And conservatives notice that. Shouldn't that lead them to think that Becker might be wrong about the racial labor market? Right? I mean,
no,
all of the arguments.
Because it's a competitive market.
Huh?
Well, I mean, so first of all, I think, as I say, Becker is incomplete. I think that on some margins, that's probably going to be true. But I think you also have to account for the fact that, like, systemic discrimination then affects all sorts of things.
Right.
It affects human capital formation. It's then going to affect the next generation. It's not a simple, like, oh,
right.
Well.
So my point is, you just made a devastatingly powerful argument for racial affirmative action.
I don't oppose affirmative action. I sort
right.
of, I have a complicated right. view on it. I'm not sure that practically it actually works very well. And I think there are sort of political problems with it as well, but I don't, as a matter of like moral philosophy, oppose affirmative action. I never have.
Right. But that makes you an outlier on the right.
Well, but in fairness, most of the people on the right who are complaining about this are also saying we don't want affirmative action. I am also saying I don't want affirmative for academics. I think, you know, for writers, it's a little different. In fact, there are things we need to cover broadly. And you have to, there are certain communities that if you want to cover them, you're really going to do best with a conservative who knows the community. Right. And in that sense, I think that it is sensible. In the same way that it is sensible for papers to hire women to cover certain women's issues and so forth.
I'm trying to make a different point, which mm-hmm. is it would be nice if now that conservatives have decided to give themselves the mantle of an oppressed minority, they started thinking about other oppressed minorities in the same way.
That was part of my essay, Mark. Was in fact, I think the liberals who read that essay thought that this was all like a crypto thing that was just aimed at them. It really wasn't. I started out by saying that I want both sides to listen to each other harder. And I mean that. I have been, I think systemic racism is real. I think all of these dynamics matter. I think that the legacy of slavery is tragic and poisonous. And in some sense, I think we should rectify it because we did it. But I actually, that's not really where I root the justice claim. Ultimately, people are members of our society. We have an obligation to build the best society we can, whether or not it's our fault.
Right. Welcome to liberalism.
No, my conservative commitments are, my right-leaning commitments are elsewhere, Mark. And so I am not opposed to affirmative, I would be opposed to a legal regime that forced affirmative action on private firms for a whole bunch of reasons. I'm not opposed to it in government hiring, except again, I have deep, deep problems with how these programs actually work. I mean, I know a number of women who, I'll start a woman-owned business for 5 years, and it's a joke. They're not really doing work. It's, you take 10% off the top and pass the money on, and that's basically a scam. I don't think that's a good way for women to do capital formation. And as a justice matter, I am not opposed to it. And I think I shouldn't say I never have been. I haven't been for a long time. I mean, sort of 10, 15 years I've been thinking about this, and it, again, I think that the way that these programs work and for example, the way in which American affirmative action in universities is set up to discriminate against Asians so that white people will continue to buy in. It's deeply problematic.
Oh, I'm with you on that.
But I am not, I don't think that there's sort of a necessary a priori reason why the program shouldn't happen. I'm just sort of skeptical that they can be done in a way that is to the benefit of the people they're trying to help.
But as you point out, roughly half the country votes what's called conservative. Mm-hmm. I doubt a legitimate claim to that title, but what's called conservative. And the politicians they vote for won't say any of the things you just said about race. You're not allowed to say that.
I'm sorry, but that was the point of the essay. As I said, conservatives, what you are saying, and I've been saying this for years, by the way, Mark, this did not just come up with the Kevin Williamson essay, with the Kevin Williamson firing, is right. Conservatives, listen to yourselves talking about liberal and academic bias. What you're saying, what you're talking about is systemic racism. And that is, it's the same thing. You do get it. Guys.
So what responses have you gotten?
Actually, so you are not going to be pleased with this. I've had a number of conservatives over the years, but also this time. I'm not saying a huge number. I didn't get an overwhelming flood. But every single time I've written something on this, I've had conservatives write me to say, wow, I never thought of it like that before. I'm really now thinking about what I believe about systemic racism. I've had zero liberals who have done anything except, no, let me explain to you, we're not bigoted. It's just that they're all really dumb and morally terrible and their manners are horrifying, and right? So if you were expecting that the conservatives would get, no, in fact, and this is, I think, not a characteristic of groups necessarily so much as the fact that I am right-leaning. And so people feel, right-leaning people are more likely to trust me and feel like I'm not out to get them. Liberals who read that essay clearly thought I was out to get them. But I'm really not out to get anyone. I'm really actually out to say, liberals, listen to yourself. Listen to yourself talking about conservatives. Do you know what you sound like? You sound like a person talking about race or gender in a bad movie about the 50s. And really think hard about, no, there's no discrimination here. We never did any of that. It doesn't work like that. You don't understand. No, in fact, I do understand. And that's what you sound like. Listen to yourself and try to have more, try to really think, am I doing this? Is this good for my organization? Is this good for America that I'm doing this? And but conservatives too, am I doing this? Do I sound like liberals talking about me? Is that good for America? Is that good for my organization? Am I doing the right thing? I really want both sides to actually seriously think that, as I said at the beginning, human's gonna human. It's the same thing. And if you're committed to, if you think it's outrageous in one context, you should think it's outrageous in another context. And I'm not talking about discriminating against people who are, you know, again, not doing your work. You don't have to hire theologians in the biology department. But I'm talking about, am I letting my preference for people who agree with me politically undermine actually my project? And I think that in a huge number of cases, we are doing that and we need to stop. And especially because, you know, to liberals, I will say this, is there some of the response I've had is like, it's sort of clear to me that liberals think they're on the verge of winning academia and the media. They're going to take over the whole thing, kick the conservatives out, and then they get to shape American political opinion, right? And that's not how it's going to play out. In the same way that Fox News was created by the kind of mild hegemony that liberals had over the media in the 80s and 90s. But Fox is not symmetric. I mean, you know, that was what I was trying to say when is that, in fact, when you select on ideology...
It's not a real news organization.
That is a gross exaggeration. Their evening programs are not the same thing as their news organization, which does an enormous amount of reporting. And in fact, corrected, you know, I think they're actually a very valuable counterweight to the otherwise groupthink tendency of the media. But they're not symmetrical. They don't, I have my big issues with the way some of these programs work.
And of course, they look moderate compared to Sinclair.
Well, but it's because, again, if you select on ideology, it doesn't look just like a little more ideological view of the other thing, right? It looks quite different. And although I will say, I actually think that the kind of hysteria about Sinclair, whether or not the ownership issue should happen, that statement was pretty boring. I don't think any of the readers got it was just dumb. I don't think any of the viewers saw like a big dog whistle. I think that a bunch of people in the media went hysterical about what was ultimately a pretty anodyne statement about being trustworthy. And again, you can say that there was a secret coded message in there, but the viewers didn't get the secret coded message.
But it is quite clear that the central Sinclair ownership is telling the news people on the local TV stations that they now own, you will say this or you will be fired. That's not usually the way a news organization works.
Sure.
CBS doesn't do that.
Well, television's a little different, right? Television does, in fact, say you will say this or you'll be fired. It's like they run it on a little scroll first. Had they made and sort of boring statements about corporate commitments to truth are not to me the same thing as making them report a piece of news or so forth. All corporate parents shape coverage. All corporate parents decide this airs, this doesn't. That is like, now you can have places with more or less independence. I just think that the hysteria about that particular statement was like, it was basically reading a house branding ad on TV, and it was kind of dumb, but I don't think that this sort of is the harbinger of the end of news. But it's not symmetric, to go back to my point, and that you shouldn't expect it to be. But that if you make what a lot of people want is a kind of very explicitly liberal media. I mean, so part of the problem is that explicitly liberal media is more likely to have a lot of the problems that Fox News has, right? Don't run that.
Okay.
Don't say that, right? But also that what happens to the rest of the country, you're gonna lose the cultural power that you're trying to use, right? You want this cultural power because you feel like you can influence people. Well, if you were explicitly liberal, they're not going to be influenced. They're going to leave. And you're going to push more of them over onto the conservative media side. It's the exact opposite of what you want. And I think for universities especially, right, it is interesting to me how many disciplines have basically explicitly constituted themselves as an explicitly liberal project, right? Sociology as a discipline, as an explicitly left project, right? And then they are surprised when conservative politicians want to defund them, right? And outraged. Well, you basically said your job is to get rid of them.
Right.
obviously they're going to. And I think that that is incredibly dangerous, right? This is not a like,
Right? Notice that conservative politicians feel perfectly free to attack universities as universities, for example, in the current tax bill. No liberal politician would propose taking away the tax exemption of evangelical churches that organize conservative politically, right? I mean, that'd be an outrage. No liberal would think that.
They're not there yet. I guarantee in 5 or 10 years, there is going to be a movement to take away the tax exemption of churches that, for example, refuse to do gay marriages. Will that movement succeed? Maybe not. But there will be politicians talking about that. Absolutely, there will. Because those people are indoctrinating our young.
Got to happen. You said liberals don't understand conservatives. I think in some cases conservatives just don't understand liberals.
I've heard these proposals already, Mark. They're not from politicians, but it's already floating around there on the left that these tax exemptions should be taken away. And in fact, the state of Illinois, some idiot at the diversity office, basically said that if you use your church, if you allow basically anyone who is not a member of your church outside, then you are subject to all of the, it might have been Iowa, definitely an I state. Some idiot in the diversity office wrote an official policy. Now, it was immediately rescinded, right? But they wrote an official policy saying that if you allow anyone outside into your church for like a potluck or bingo, you're now a public accommodation and you have to abide by the sexual identity and anti-discrimination stuff. Now, did they immediately rescind it? So let me point out, I'm not saying that this became government policy. It would have a hard time getting through the Supreme Court. My point is there are already people on the left who think this, and that those people on the left are growing in power. So I would not be so confident, Mark, that you are not going to see. Now, again, is it going to happen? There's a lot of hurdles for that to actually happen. Is that going to be something that people on the left want to see over gay marriage? Yes. 100%. There are already people who want to see it. And those are people who apparently are at least prominent enough to get employed by a state human rights commission. So, you know, that is, and I think this is bad on both sides. I want everyone to stand down in the culture war and start like treating each other with more empathy and stop thinking that they are going to get to the point of total victory. You're not. The other half of the country is still here, and they're not going anywhere.
Well, that seems like a good note to end on. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Megan.
All right. I didn't mean to browbeat you, Mark.
Take care.
Take care. You too.
Before you go, a quick message from the suits at Blogging Heads TV. Blogging Heads will always be free for you to watch and listen to, and we don't even go the NPR route of guilting you into donating during Pledge Week. But we do have a small request. If you enjoy Blogging Heads programming, rate and review us on iTunes. The iTunes algorithm weighs positive reviews heavily, so taking a few minutes to rate and review us will help more people find out about our shows. Also, of course, we encourage you to subscribe to our Twitter and Facebook feeds. Thank you.